Welcome to SDI Encounters, a podcast from Spiritual Directors International. I'm Matt Whitney. Thank you so much for listening. I offer a heartfelt welcome to new listeners and a welcome back to existing subscribers. If you like this show, please do click on the subscribe button. Here we offer a wide range of perspectives, stories, and conversations centered around community, spiritual companionship, and spiritual care. You'll find additional information, including videos, webinars, and digital publications at our website, sdiworld.org. SDI is a member-supported global contemplative movement that contributes to peace, justice, and living in right relationship with all creation. Your membership supports this podcast, publications, educational programming, outreach, and more. Together, we're changing the world through the contemplative action of spiritual direction. Everyone is welcome to become a member at SDI. You do not need to be a spiritual director to join. Benefits include subscriptions to our Presence magazine, Listen and Connections, our Discover newsletter, discounts on educational events, and more. Become a new member or renew your membership on SDI's secure online store, secure.sdiworld.org. Jan Lundy and Jeanette Banaschek are longtime members of SDI. They are spiritual directors and founders of a unique training program called the Spiritual Guidance Training Institute, which educates and equips people to be spiritual directors and companions. They do so from an inner spiritual perspective, not tied to any particular religion, but respectful of the thread that runs through each of them. Our conversation went for quite a while as we talked about what it means to be inner spiritual and how to train as a spiritual director, and a sharing of our own personal journeys. So I've turned this conversation into two parts. So this episode is part one, with the focus on what it looks like to be a spiritual independent or to be spiritually fluid. And maybe you can relate. It doesn't mean that you have no faith tradition, though it might, but in your life's journey to commune with mystery and the ground of all being, you may find that no one particular tradition has all the answers you seek. Or you may find answers in more than one faith tradition, or not in any tradition, but in lived experience. Maybe it's not answers at all, but it's questions that motivate your spiritual journey. What is perhaps most true is that each person's spiritual journey is unique and is not easily identified by one way of thinking or any particular ideology. Jan and Jeanette both have been on this journey personally and vocationally.
I think, we really hope to focus on this whole idea of companionship for spiritual independence, because this really is one of our expertises, you know, through the Institute, and for us personally, because that's been our journeys so far, individually as well. And we just received this amazing email this morning from Stephen relating this life-changing experience that this woman had who took the webinar, the SDI webinar on companioning spiritual independence, which jazzed me even more that it could create healing between people and within families. Deeper understanding of why someone has chosen the particular spiritual path that they have chosen. So instead of distancing ourselves from each other, this understanding of what it means to be a spiritually independent person or a spiritually fluid person or a multiply religious person can create amazing conversations and healing within a family or a community. So I'm really jazzed about it right now, because I think it's where we're going and where we need to be to open our hearts to one another fully.
Yeah. I'm jazzed for it too, from both an organizational level, because I agree with you. I think that's where Spiritual Directors International is going. And I'm sensing more and more in myself that it's somewhere where I'm personally going on my own spiritual journey. And so I am also just jazzed for this conversation. I'm so grateful, Jeanette and Jan, that you are here to chat with me this morning. I want to get into how we serve and are present to spiritual independence. And maybe you can talk about your work at the Institute, what that work is, what that ministry is, and how you approach the people that you interact with.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Jeanette, you want to go first or shall I?
Why don't you start with this one, Jan?
Okay. Well, Jeanette and I have known each other for a long time, and we've each been following the path of what it means to be a spiritual companion. And because we each began, I'd say, in more traditional settings, and we were trained in a traditional contemplative Christian program that formed a wonderful foundation. And yet, because we know the spiritual journey is ever-changing and unfolding, you know, we found ourselves expanding our own spirituality to embrace that which really resonated deep in our hearts, in our core, with who and what the divine was to each of us, and to what that means to us as spiritual companions, how we serve others, and what it means to us as our role, our service in the world. So we began having conversations a few years ago about this and realizing that there could be a way to train spiritual companions in what we are now calling interfaith or interspiritual guidance or companionship or direction, depending on the term that you use. As seekers and also as companions, we were increasingly feeling the changing religious landscape of this country and globally, and people struggling with not knowing how they fit into community, or struggling with not being able to embrace traditional theology anymore, and yet feeling this longing for this deep connection to the sacred as they were uniquely beginning to understand it. So we began talking, and in 2017, Jeanette reached out to some wonderful organizations to lend support to our efforts, Shalem being one, and John Mabry at the Chaplaincy Institute. He said, go for it. This is very needed, especially in the Midwest. So what we do is we've created this hybrid format so we can work with individuals all over the world. So it's online, as well as residential institutes in Chicago. And one of the hallmarks of our program is not only creating a sacred community online, which is we feel we've been able to do really successfully, so it feels intimate, but also to go into a very special city like Chicago, and I think maybe this is where Jeanette could lend her expertise too, and why we chose Chicago as the site of our residential institutes and what we actually do there to help people step into the role of being an interfaith or interspiritual companion with real practicality. So, it's an exciting process.
Related to the Chicago piece, 1893, the first Parliament of the World Religions was in Chicago. And so there's fertile ground for organizations to collaborate, to teach, to train in interfaith and interspiritual matters. So it feels very exciting to have our residential institutes here. I'm in Chicago, and explore some of the different sacred places that are all around the city, which we do. We do field trips during the week together. And we just had one recently with our people, and we went to Inner City Muslim Action Network. And we went to the Hindu temple in Lamont. And then because the week was over Ash Wednesday, we went to a Catholic Ash Wednesday service and a Protestant Ash Wednesday service to round out the week. So, you know, that's one little facet of what we do at the residential institutes, but Chicago seems like a really wonderful place for the exploration of our religious, spiritual, ethical lives. You know, I want to say related to what Jan said, we're 2 years old. You know, we're starting our third cohort in the fall, and we're constantly asking ourselves, who is interested in a kind of program like ours? And in our first residential institute last fall, we sat around in the circle and our students shared their spiritual autobiography. And at the end of the time, there was like this moment in the circle, and it was silent. And we're all sort of listening into the silence. And one person said, I thought I was alone in this journey. I didn't realize that there were other people who thought and felt and acted like I did. And what they meant was, I didn't realize that there were people who are spiritually curious, to use a Dwayne Bidwell phrase, who are spiritually engaged and are participating in practices, are participating in communities, and then have their own personal practices at home. And they thought, I thought I was alone in this because I'm bringing in a couple of different traditions in a respectful, knowledgeable way. Always being careful of appropriation, of course. And, you know, I think Jan and I shared a glance and thought, okay, these are some of our students. And then we built a community from there, a cohort.
Well, first of all, I'm reminded, Jeanette, that we need to do a separate conversation about walking sacred places in the city, because that's a big part of my own work as an artist. And I led the journey after the conference doing just that around Seattle in a very similar manner. And so we are kindred spirits in that.
Yeah.
I wanna learn more about your cohort program and what it is. But before we do that, can you define for me what a spiritual independent is? And embedded in that maybe is a critique of the very notion of categorizing somebody as being a certain thing or this but not that, and et cetera. But I know you've done a lot of thinking and discerning around that. So,
yeah, we really have. And that's one of the topics that is very near and dear to our heart, is why labels? Why is it important to establish someone's religious or spiritual identity? Is that helpful? Does it keep us separated from one another? And who gets to choose the label? And up until now, there have been some identity labels that have not been very helpful to a lot of people who are walking a broader path, one of which is spiritual but not religious. It seems neutral, but it's not really neutral. It implies that someone maybe should be religious, and the connotation is that if you're spiritual, maybe that's not quite enough. The nuns is a misnomer, you know, that came from the box that someone could check in a national survey. It doesn't speak to the reality of people's experience. Rarely are people none. They are, you know, a variety of things. And so there are new terms which have really come about just the past few years, which are really very exciting to think about. And one is spiritually curious, which Jeanette talked about briefly, and she could maybe give a better definition of that than I can. Spiritually independent, spiritually fluid is a new term just in the last under a year, coined by Dwayne Bidwell, whose new work, When One Religion Isn't Enough, is really, really important to this conversation. And he also uses a term, multiply religious. But a spiritual independent, and I'll give you a quick definition here, is someone who may have moved away from traditional houses of worship in their quest for the sacred. They are not dismissive of God or spirituality, but simply find religious labels and affiliation too narrow and constraining. Typically, people who are spiritually independent might even resist calling themselves that because they just don't want to be put in a box, generally. But they do share the same existential questions as almost every other human being. But they may not confine their search for the answers to any one religion. The answers that they do seem to find are often rooted in the perennial philosophy or perennial wisdom, which is and often taught by the great mystics of the world's religions, that there are deeper truths, there are complementary practices, there are compatible theologies that run through the great wisdom traditions, and they step into that river. Drescher talks about a spiritual independent being somebody who may embrace an extra institutional spirituality, a self-identified seeker. And I actually really love that term, a self-identified seeker. There's power in that. You know, there's depth in that. And yet they may have a diverse toolkit of spiritual practices drawn from diverse religious and spiritual traditions, which is shaped into, and this is another really important phrase, I think, which is shaped into a self-authorized mode of meaning making. So it's really a spiritual walk of deep listening and tending to what is stirring within oneself regarding their understanding of the sacred, and then making meaning of it and bringing it into their walk on the earth. So that would be, in a nutshell, what a spiritual independent is.
I can imagine that as one discovers that sense that they are a seeker within themselves and that they are on a lifelong journey in which their own sense of presence is not static, but is always changing. That can be lonely, that it can feel isolating for the reasons that you said, that being put into categories doesn't really fit. And so finding community where other people are similarly on that journey, but in different places on that journey, can be really challenging. And so can you, with that in mind, can you talk about how you create that space for people within your cohort program? Hmm.
I was going to say, yeah. Jeanette, you already named one, right? We start out inviting them to share their spiritual narrative. That's kind of the launching off point. There's a trust in sharing the journey, their unique journey, with people who they don't know, but yet who they sense have come to the same place for the same sort of thing.
Yeah. And then our framework around the narrative is that this is today's version. And the thing with spiritual independence, the whole conversation about spiritual independence is what Jen and I are discussing today with you, Matt, may change in a week, in a month, in a couple of years. And so it's ever developing, it's ever evolving. And so that's our frame for the narrative is this is one version. This is one way to tell your sacred story. And throughout our program, you'll have many other instances. And so kind of building off of that, our first couple of modules are about story And one is listening to another's sacred tale, and then also telling your own living sacred tale. So it's an awareness of what we kind of begin with, what do I bring to this relationship, and being honest that I am bringing a history, but let's explore that history and, you know, to use a Wilbur term, let's include that history in my story today, but then consider in the future, how do we transcend that?
The other thing that creates intimacy, I believe, is that we do visit various holy houses together of traditions that people may not be have any history with or even be comfortable with. You know, in one of our first cohorts, we went to the Hare Krishna temple. And, you know, you think, wow, what is that going to mean for me? And we share food with people. And we talk and have conversations with people of other traditions. And that creates an intimacy also, because it's a new shared experience. The other thing that we do is we have a unique listening protocol within SGTI called Pure Presence. And so right away, they are encouraged through various practices to listen deeply to themselves, to what is stirring. Is there bias? Is there judgment? Am I open? Am I closed? And we cultivate practices that are really rooted in the Eastern traditions that help us be transparent and self-aware and heart-opened at the same time. So there's a lot of revelation that happens, intimate revelation, because you're creating a circle of trust immediately with, this is what's going on with me. I'm sure not comfortable even saying this to you, that I felt this when I went to the Jewish synagogue or this when I went to the Islamic center, but we can talk about that safely here and then have compassion for ourselves because we're in process. Mm. We're in process of opening and being available to others of all traditions and noticing where our biases are and our judgments might be.
So even a form for like the field trip, for example, we have like this field trip form, and the first couple of questions are about where are they today? What are their past experiences with this tradition, if any, and then what assumptions do they bring? What questions do they bring? And then of course they have the encounter in the sacred space, and then there's follow-up reflection. And that sort of is the model of our entire program. It's like, what do you bring? Because you come full of knowledge. What do you bring today? And then let's have an experience, an encounter. Let's have a module on story, for example. And then, but let's now reflect on that. And in some ways, it's kind of like the peer group model, you know, the traditional peer group model, which we do as well. And we do peer group online on Zoom every month. But once the peer group is over, we step outside of that circle, to use a Palmer term, that circle of trust, and we become observers of the process. So it's like every touch point is an intentional touch point to helping our students and ourselves to transform, to find out who they are, to live into who they are, and then to realize, okay, well, what does that mean then in service of others? What do I do with this? Like, I just have had these transformative experiences. I want to integrate them. And how do I now go out into the world in my niche and serve?
And I imagine that just looks different for everybody.
Yeah. And that's one thing for Jan and me, we talk individually with our people and say, where are you at? You're an educator, you're a social worker, you're a minister, you're retired. So what do you want your practice to look like? And kind of let's talk about that over the entirety of the program.
And I would say that our students tend towards spiritual fluidity, but many are deeply rooted in one tradition.
Yeah.
And they are invited out into a greater landscape to notice what stirs in them about, if they're a Christian, Buddhism or Hinduism or Judaism, for example, or Islam. And so they may find, as many of us do who are spiritually independent by claiming that as our own identity, that there might be something there for them to enhance their own tradition. Maybe it is they go to a synagogue and we experience the Friday night Shabbat, and they are deeply touched by this idea of Sabbath, that maybe I could create a Sabbath at home for myself to rest for 24 hours. They'd never considered that perhaps, but they see and feel the importance of it through the Jewish community. So their experience of their own tradition can be enhanced as well. So yeah. I just wanted to set that straight, that not everyone and not all of our students would claim themselves as spiritual independents necessarily. You know, one might be a UCC pastor, or one might be a yoga teacher deeply rooted in the Hindu tradition. So, you know, there's a variety there.
Mm-hmm. How do you learn to trust your own sacred tale? I can imagine that people, I mean, just the breadth of personal experiences of people who come to you, you know, each is singular, but I imagine a lot of people come to you out of institutional religion and, you know, where you are trained to, you know, sort of trust the tenets of that institution. And so in going beyond that onto your own journey, you know, how do you learn to trust yourself? How do you learn to trust that inner voice? And maybe that's, I imagine that's something you've both experienced too for yourselves. You said you were both trained in contemplative Christian spiritual direction, but have moved into this interspiritual path. And so how you learn to take those steps, those first steps, and learn how to trust that.
You know, I'm thinking my first experience of that actually, Matt, when I was 21 and in college and took a yoga class as a PE requirement, because believe it or not, back then PE was still required of college students. And so I thought, what in the world can I take? Okay, I can take bowling and I can take yoga. And so it was completely foreign to me. What was yoga? And there was something that happened in engaging in that practice that was a deep felt experience within the body, a body knowing of deep peace, perhaps, of deep rest, being able to let go, of being connected to something greater than myself, even in simply doing breath and postures. And I think the trust for me came that this made me aware of, one, there was something more to me than just my body and my mind. There was something happening here. It brought greater peace and well-being, and it enlivened me. It empowered me to want to do more for my inner life and my inner being. So that was, I would say for many of us, it's a deep awareness of body wisdom, body listening. Where is the peace? Where is the release? Where is the joy? And trusting that as a first step, perhaps. Hmm.
That's so, thanks, Jan. I'm inspired. We're in our program, we use To Tell the Sacred Tale from Janet Ruffing, Spiritual Direction and Narrative. And She starts out the chapter by saying, we can think of spiritual direction as telling a sacred tale, This ministry, from my perspective, is one of the privileged embodiments of the gracious illumination and fashioner of all things that Sophia, Holy Wisdom, is in our ministerial lives. The art of listening sacred stories into speech is a core activity. And she goes on. And I love that phrase of listening sacred stories into speech. And so in some ways, how do I learn to trust my sacred tale is by telling it and by getting opportunities to tell it. And by having a trusted friend, a trusted companion say, to ask good questions to help me to access the stuff that's going on in the inner world that, quite honestly, before I met my first spiritual director, I had no idea that I had this inner world. And so having the opportunities to tell it, I think that being able to share a story not only is a way to reflect on the past, but it also informs my future. And, you know, Jen, I appreciate you saying that there's something embodied about it, even telling the tale. You know, telling the tale while I'm on a walk is a different way to tell my story, and new things come out as I'm walking than like right now when we're sitting. So it's being aware of the interrelationship of, and I'm going to tease all these out, even though I know that they're kind of one, but the heart and the head and the body relationship, interrelationship.
And I imagine that there's real power in saying your story, like having it translated into speech from your own, you know, getting it out of your head, as it were, and, you know, using your vocal cords and hearing it come out of your mouth and having that story then, you know, come out into the space and then have it heard by someone else. Gives it a different kind of articulation and a different kind of authenticity.
Yeah, I'm thinking about sometimes when I tell my story, I say, is that true? Do I mean that? You know, I'm sort of I'm such an extrovert and a verbal processor that I'm making meaning as I talk. And then I'll say sometimes, if I tell my story tomorrow, it may sound a little bit different, but that's because I've processed it anew. Because I have heard my own voice, like you said.
And I'm thinking that because I'm by nature more of an introvert, one of the ways that I was invited in my 30s to share my story was through writing. And that helped me hear my own voice and then to put it out there for others. And sometimes that was really scary because sometimes the narrative wasn't necessarily what the other people in my geographical region, for example, or in a particular audience that would read something that would resonate with them. And so there would be criticism. There would be not quite empathetic understanding. And so that invited me to, as a spiritual independent or spiritually fluid person, a couple of things. One is it creates some uncertainty and some fear. And we find this happens with a lot of spiritually independent people, is they don't share their story because of fear of reprisal or alienation within a family or a community or a religious group. So they hold their story deep inside. And it can be paralyzing sometimes to not be able to share your story of this deep and tender and juicy understanding of who you are as a spiritual being. So it is really important to find trusted individuals. Jeanette mentioned, you know, a companion, a spiritual director, a trusted friend who can hold your story for you. I think people who are spiritually independent are especially vulnerable when it comes to this because of their history of non-acceptance, of being non-traditional. And so to finally create the narrative is really empowering I just had another chapter of that unfold in my own life, reading Dwayne Bidwell's book on When One Religion Isn't Enough, because of being in a very conservative community that just really could not hold to the idea that you could be rooted in two traditions. And so there was great freedom in hearing him tell his story of being a Christian pastor and a Buddhist practitioner. And that he puts new terms to things like, well, maybe you're a spiritually fluid person. Maybe you have had a call from mystery that you have stepped into. And so, yes, maybe you were born in two traditions, as many, you know, people are today, a parent of one tradition and a parent of another, or maybe you are multiply religious by choice, but some have this collaboration with mystery that you can't help but follow the breadcrumbs on the trail. But to share that with others can be very tenuous. So yeah, to find that safe person, even if it's just one person, and maybe that's your spiritual director, your spiritual companion, that you feel safe sharing that story with them. And that's why it's so important for spiritual companions, spiritual directors, to be trained and to know how to receive the tale of someone who might be fluid or multiply religious, and not try to kind of coerce them or lead them back into a more traditional way of being, to really journey with them and be with them as they are. With no agenda on your part.
A big part of one's spiritual journey is learning how to trust what some call the inner voice, the intuition, or the gut. How do we begin to learn to trust our own sacred story? Jan talked about body knowing as a way of being. Why do contemplatives and meditation practitioners focus so much on breathing? I think it's because breathing is an unassailable way of knowing through the body. We can trust our breath. It's happening right now. You are alive, which is a miracle. And in that truth, how can you not have a sacred story? Next week, we'll release part two of this conversation. This is Matt Whitney with Spiritual Directors International. Thanks again for listening. Your time and your presence here are deeply appreciated. If you liked this show and would like us to continue making them, please do subscribe now while it's fresh on your mind. Also, we would love to hear from you, so please feel free to send in your comments and suggestions to the email address podcast@sdiworld.org. To learn more about spiritual companionship and ways that you can plug in and join our community, visit us at our website at www.sdiworld.org. Thank you. Blessings and peace on your day, and may you share blessings and peace to others.